This is Super Yacht Radio.
Welcome to Super Yacht Radio. Welcome back to one of our favorite shows where we are talking with Super Yacht Foodie and we're discovering about some amazing foods and drinks all around the world. You have been with us this year as we have gone through some beautiful different products from Finland. And today we're actually moving much more north and we're going to Greenland and discovering about some amazing water. I have with me today Thomas Winderspoon and Henrik Brandt Jensen, who are involved and founders of Inland Ice and Nordic Notes. To elaborate the story, Thomas, I'm going to go back to you because I believe you were the original founder in Inland Ice and looking at this opportunity of water from Greenland.
We started out this project back in 2016, where we, along with the, we got an opportunity with the Greenland government, who wanted to attract people up to kind of have a new, where they export the water. What that means is that you will get a license for 20 years, and then you will get an area designated for you, and then you can actually collect the ice when these glaciers basically start erupting into the ocean. So you can pick up, so our license is in the ocean, and then you can pick up from there and you can collect the ice from there in your area. And then you pay a fee or royalty to the Greenland government. And also that what we do is they want to have people to invest up there so they get more employees. So we employ Greenlandic people to collect the ice and gather it and send it to our factory, where we then produce it and bottle it as well. So this was kind of a
drive of the Greenland government to kind of develop the economy, but in a more sustainable way in many ways, because, you know, we've been drilling oil and other things, which would be much more polluting.
Absolutely. And also, of course, we get to ask the question sometimes. So, why to export water all the way from Greenland? But the way we do it now, we actually export it bulk and then produce it close to the consumers. So we have a CO2 carbon footprint there, but it's actually not that big because we are producing the bottles close to the market so for instance in Europe we produce it in Sweden, so we're close to the consumer.
Okay. Just for people's concept, because you know, when I'm first hearing about Inland Ice and, you know, bottling up this really pure water, I almost see people like with buckets, you know, underneath the dripping ice. And collecting it, and then so it's very different, I would imagine, to kind of the generic water processing plants. Of course, you're working in a very natural environment for the most part. When you say the Greenlanders are involved in the collecting of it, just as a concept, how do they actually collect it? There's a term calving, I think, which was...
Yeah, we are basically, first of all, I want to say, when you have the image of you basically standing underneath the ice and dripping down to the bottom, that's actually how they do it up in one of the areas where people come as tourists and they bring their Scotch whiskey, and then they collect the ice in that way when they drink the whiskey and sitting and looking out on the bay in Ilulissat. So you're not far off. We just scale it up a little bit. And the way we have done it is with the Greenlandic people, we have built some, I don't know what we can call it, because I think, but it's some machines that can collect it. And the way we have done it, so they can kind of go into the ice and then have a little kind of like a big bag. And from there, like you transport wine from Australia, then you bottle it in Europe. It's kind of the same way we transport it as well. Yeah. And then, as I said, we have built these machines who can then kind of go into the ice. I don't have an expression for it because I don't think they have been built before. But that we have done with the Greenlandic people.
Amazing, because it's actually not just sort of quite a unique water, but actually having to develop quite a unique way of capturing it and then, you know, processing it later.
Yeah. And it also, the reason why we also use Greenlandic people is because, of course, they know the area up there and it can be very rough. We had the first time we went up there, we were supposed to do everything in 5 days and it took us 18 days just due to bad weather. And also we have in certain periods of the year, as of right now, we're not allowed to go into the area because there can be birds nesting in there and so on. So we have always to take care of the and be aware of the environmental issues there is up there as well.
Maybe one additional comment, you know, to what Thomas said. This carbon footprint is, of course, important, you know. So we're also working with a certified organization in Denmark, making sure that we as a company are 100% CO2 neutral. So there is a official calculation of how much CO2 we actually use. And based on that, we are paying a royalty that is used for green purposes. It can be planting trees in Africa, or setting up windmills and stuff like that. So as a company, we're 100% 100% neutral CO2 offset.
Because I think I certainly in the superyacht industry, there has been a huge growing awareness, particularly over the past 5 years, you know, over 10 as well. But sustainability and how things are produced, where we get them from, you know, is all kind of becoming much more, we become much more aware. And I imagine as well, dealing with Greenland, you know, we all know about the melting ice sheets. So trying to take something that has seen as being negative and creating something positive with it, I think is a nice kind of circle to be in.
Yeah. And that has been also the goal set out from the Greenland government straight from the beginning, that you do this. And we all know that it's a sensitive environment. So there is a lot of rules and regulation as well for what you can do. And so it's not like we're standing and chopping off the ice. As I said, it is something that happens in a natural process every year. Of course, more during the summertime where the ice will carve into the ocean and melt. And during the wintertime, it's more frozen. And you can actually say, if you're really, really optimistic, the more we collect of this ice, the less it melts into the ocean, where, as we know of right now, a lot of ice is melting into the ocean, and you're talking about rising oceans as well. Mm-hmm. So I would say drink a lot of water from Greenland.
Well, it was another thing that struck me as I was doing some research was 15 years ago, the pink Himalayan salt came along and we all thought it was fantastic because it was this ancient salt that hadn't been touched in Himalayas. And I got the same sort of feeling reading about your water, because this is basically ice that has melted from 100,000 years of not the world we're living in. So that sense of not having, not just something that has been so pure over history, finally kind of not being exposed, as most of our water is, to all sorts of other things. Yeah. That moment of maybe a mammoth stood on that ice.
Yeah. But it is basically, so also the ice has never been down in the ground. So because it's a bedrock, so you can imagine when you have this, the ice sheet is around 3 kilometers thick and you will have snow every year comes down. And at some point it pushes, it's so heavy that it pushes, but it will be the bottom of the bedrock who kind of proceeds and being pushed out to sea. So it will always be the oldest ice that comes out and then it kind of go down in layers. And when we had this, who was shown this by Geos, who was doing this and drilling into the ice. And you can actually, just like a tree, you can see rings and say, okay, this is from this is, and so on and on. And you can see them and they can point out and say, okay, here we go 10,000 years, we go 50,000 years and so on. Mm-hmm. And they can pinpoint it. We can, of course, not, but experts can do that. And that's also how we say in general, some is a little bit older, some is a little bit less, but on average it's 100,000 years old.
Fantastic. And part of their process also, you were saying before we began, was sort of mapping out in Greenland. They put a huge amount of research, of figuring, you know, the different areas, where is stable, where isn't. Quite a lot of science behind it, or as you called it, icicle science.
Yeah, absolutely. And this also is available. I cannot remember the website, but I know they have a website, and I'm pretty sure it's up and running now. They have spent the past 5 years mapping it all out, and then they wanted to show live satellite photos, so they can track, basically the full ice core in there from top to bottom to see what is actually going on. Is it, of course, right now we all know that it's melting a little bit faster than it should do as well. So, but that is all being mapped out, and you can follow that live and online.
Wow, fantastic. Now, the other thing that comes with this, the purity of it, and it's something we all know because of, you know, I was saying, having lived in Spain and France, I certainly moved from tap water when I lived there to bottled water, and we all become a bit more connoisseurs, and the more you drink of different waters, the more you can kind of taste. I feel like it's this growing knowledge. We're all sommeliers of water in some way, and you get to have your favorites. And a lot of that for us, or, you know, for our palates, is the composition of it. So, you know, on the side of our bottles, and you see the various different minerals, kind of the way of testing is to see how many total dissolved solids are in water. Now, understanding a little bit more of this, it's quite a scale. You know, the maximum, I think, allowed for drinking water is 500 parts per million. And if you're up to 1,000, you really don't want to drink that water. Comparatively, you test on a regular basis your water as well, don't you? And on that scale, you have some very interesting results.
Now, we test it every time. We basically test it. On every single batch we're picking up, we'll test it, actually three times. And what we found out pretty early in the stage is that this water is extremely clean, you can say. So the total dissolved solids is basically what else is in the water than water. Mm-hmm. And here there's next to nothing. We do use 15 because it varies a little bit, and we don't want to, you know, if we put like, okay, this one has 12.6 or 8.9. So it's less than 15 in total. But in general, it's a little bit less than that. And it's very, very smooth water and very, very soft. And I can give you an example. So we did a collaboration with a chocolatier in Denmark. He has won a couple of gold medals for his chocolate, and he was saying, oh, he would like to experiment with using this. He has a certain way that he doesn't use milk, but he uses water instead. And there's a piece today that's called In an Ice, a chocolate piece, and he's entered it also to the for contest, and we won the Scandinavian championship, went on to the world championship, and they won the gold medal there as well. Wow. But the funny thing was that when he used that compared to Copenhagen water, for instance, he actually had to build a bigger wall, you can say, of the chocolate to protect the ganache he has inside, which is made of the water, because it's so smooth that if he doesn't do that, it actually just went through the chocolate compared to, like, and when you taste them, you can taste. Yeah, it's so soft. And if you compare it to the we did it with a Copenhagen water, and we also for fun used some water from Georgia, which is very, very hard. And it's you would think that, okay, you just add water and then it should be the same, but it's completely different, both in the feel when you taste it, but also in the taste as well.
Because I'm wondering, like, often our taste of water either is unpleasant because it comes from the chlorine or, you know, other dissolved things in it. But sometimes some of the balance of the minerals can give a taste. I know, you know, companies that do filtered water, they sometimes add back in minerals because the water to give the water flavor. So
yeah,
how does that balance?
I would say I understand that they do that, and also some are they probably do it because they like, for instance, in Denmark we have a lot of calcium in the water, so it's very, very hard when you drink it, and when you see it everywhere, even when people use it for, you know, for boiling water for the instant coffee, you'll see the calcium in the bowl afterwards. You can see the calcium in the boiler. Yeah. So they will kind of remove a little bit of that, add something else to have the taste. We don't need to do that, basically. Ours is just as it should be. And you also have someone who adds a little bit, and then they say, oh, you can get some of your daily minerals here. But in reality, if you should cover your daily mineral intake in water, you will have to drink like maybe 100 or 200 liters. So it's completely unrealistic. It's not, and you can just add up what the minerals there is compared to what you should have. The minerals you should have every day, you should get through the food and not through the water.
Well, and I'd say it's also because we're so used to water having stuff in it, it must be quite a gastronomic experience as well, because it's almost adjusting our taste to, this is actually what pure water tastes like. It's actually an experience probably most of us haven't had in having pure water, you know, because we don't get it in life, even if you filter it, you know, it's not not that pure.
No. And I would say we have some restaurants who are taking it in, and they're actually using it for that when they are high-end restaurants. And they say, okay, you have a course now, and you get like 10, 11 courses when you dine. And then they will have to actually use our water in between as well to cleanse the palate, because it's so pure. You'll also find if you taste Illan Ice the very, very first time you taste it, you feel a little bit dry because there are more, more stuff inside your mouth that it's actually taking away than it's in the water. So it dries out your mouth a little bit because it's cleaning up, you know, your taste buttons. That is always something when we have introduced to people, they all say on the first one, then the second one, they are more, you know, say, okay, this is really smooth and it tastes very clean as well. But we have restaurants who are using it as a palate cleanser as well in between the courses.
Yeah, interesting.
For the wine.
From what you were saying,
I think also one additional comment, you know, some people tasting it for the first time, at least people from the northern part of Europe who are accustomed to snow, will say they have the sensation of eating snow when you were a child, when you're actually drinking the water. So you have this smoothness and this illustration in your head when you're drinking the water.
Interesting. Yeah, and I would say for chefs as well, you know, what you were saying of working with the chocolate, that working with a different kind of water, I presume even freezing it or incorporating it into meals, it's almost a different medium to work with. It's not just a spoonful of water. It reacts differently.
Absolutely. And we also had, of course, we also had a famous Danish barista using it, so he using it in his cold brew coffee, and he was doing a test with the various waters, including tap water from Denmark, and they asked us if we wanted to put ours up. Now this was sponsored by a government regulated tap water supplier, so we were a little bit most likely they just want to say, oh, there's no difference in the water, and you know, you should just drink tap water. But it actually came out to our advantage that this guy, who was this famous barista, he was so happy afterwards that he actually wanted our water to use it in his cold brew coffee. And that's quite expensive just to pour, you know, bottles of water down. But he was happy with it. And he has also won a couple of medals as well. Actually, just a couple of weeks ago, he was the first time we got a third place, I think it's 2 weeks ago, so he was crowned Danish champion. So it is, there's a different taste when you use as you use water as an ingredient, and you can use, you know, you will have the tap water, and you know the tap water from Spain or France, and you will never drink it, even in the UK as well, you know. certainly in London area, you will, yeah.
Yeah.
So there is a London big difference, too. And people are getting more and more aware of it.
And also, I think our palates have, we've upgraded our palates over the past three decades. You know, people are much more in tune with the more delicate flavors, you know, and our gastronomic understanding, I think, is so much better as well. That I could see as a chef, just this simple addition could really make a difference, because it's such a basic in cooking and our daily lives anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And finally, I have to say as well, your packaging is lovely as well. You've created these very beautiful bottles. So, you know, I take it you bottle it, as you said, in Sweden. We've all moved away from plastics. I think as a warder, I would far prefer to have it in glass bottles. They're beautiful. They, you know, you could just have one of those as your connoisseur wine or your connoisseur water on the table as well, couldn't you?
That's what we aim to. So I'm happy that you think so. So that is what we have been aiming for. And of course, also getting a little bit of this, what you say, Scandinavian, Greenlandic look on it. So it's very clean, minimalistic. Because up there, if you go up to Greenland, there's not a lot than other than nature, basically.
Yeah, no, I think for the super yacht market, which is very, very high end, you really have Michelin star chefs. There's a lot of competition among them to try and bring new things in, as there are with all chefs. I can see this really could be a lovely addition to brokering, that it's giving that palate experience. I think we keep wanting, particularly post-pandemic, I think we're looking for new experiences. And to bring it back to something as simple as water, you know, our basic need, that there is this kind of top five-star level of water that, you know, you look at it and you think that's 100,000 years that I get to drink, you know, that would just be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
Wonderful. Well, Thomas and Henrique, thank you so much for joining us today. For those that want to find out more, you can find out more about this water online at inlandbyinlandice.com.
No, inlandice.gl. .gl.
.gl.
Yeah.
And for all of you chefs and stews on board, please contact Superyacht Foodie, the marketing platform, and you'll be able to find out who's provisioning this around the Med and around the world as well. But thank you so much for joining us today, and what a marvelous experience of beautiful water.
This is Super Yacht Radio.
Does provisioning make you moody? Well, look no further than Super Yacht Foodie. We source and test the finest food and drink, so when you order, you don't have to think. Check out the Superyacht Foodie Instagram feed if gourmet inspiration is what you need. We don't sell the products directly to you. We work with all the provisioners you already knew. Contact your favourite provisioner or agent if you want the finest ingredients sent. We will connect you with the suppliers directly who will fulfil your orders 100% correctly. Email info@superyachtfoodie.com if you want to know where the best ingredients are from. Follow Super Yacht Foodie on Insta and Facebook, and tag us to share the exquisite meals you cook. Super Yacht Foodie, rediscover your passion for provisioning.